Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires.
Would you mind reading
that
again?
Huh?
Would you mind reading that again?
Yes. There's a lot in that verse, you know, right? Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires. Purport. The shortest purport I've ever seen. This verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5.19.27. So basically, that's the Lord going through the verse and taking word by word, explaining the meaning of this Atma Rama verse. It's a very famous verse, which in the relationship between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also, this came up. And Sarvabhauma, he got some meanings out of that. I think 18 meanings, different meanings of the verse. Different meanings by taking the different words in the Sanskrit and their different explanations. And Mahaprabhu, he then got...
Mahaprabhu got 18, Sarvabhauma got 9.
Sarvabhauma got 9, and Mahaprabhu then got 18, yeah, and he was astonished. That's when he started to realize this kind of knowledge isn't possible for an ordinary jiva soul, this must be the Lord himself. He got his first inkling about that, and then later on, of course, the thing was, in their relationship, the Lord didn't want to make him feel embarrassed, you know, make him feel humiliated, you know, because he was a very senior scholar in Puri and in... of all the scriptures, but he was favouring the Shankaracharya's commentaries, impersonalistic interpretation of Vedanta Sutra. So Mahaprabhu had to readjust him, basically, and break his pride as a great scholar. A lot of students, you know. But when Sarvabhauma realised that Mahaprabhu is Narayan himself, then he was okay. He said, well, what can you do? That's God himself. But Sarvabhauma's knowledge was said to be like Brihaspati. Brihaspati is Deva Guru, the guru of all the devatas. Brihaspati, the Jupiter planet. And Brihaspati is the god. Just like Shukla is a guru of the Asuras, Asura Guru. And Shukla and Brihaspati, there's in some opposition. Yeah. Because the Asuras, they're always going for enjoyments, and Shukra, who is the Shukracharya, is the Lord of Friday. You know, Friday is the day of enjoyment. It's ruled by Shukracharya, and then Thursday is Brihaspati, and Brihaspati is to do with religion, religiousness, piety. So then some opposition, sometimes fighting as well. Anyway, Sarvabhauma's knowledge was to be said to be equal to Brihaspati, and also he had the special blessing of Saraswati, the goddess of learning and knowledge. We say Saraswati, like Chaitanya Saraswat Math, one meaning Saraswati, divine sound. So Sri is a beautiful, Lakshmi is beauty, and Chaitanya is Mahaprabhu, of course, but meaning consciousness. Chaitanya means consciousness. Sri Chaitanya, then Saraswati is the divine sound coming down through Sri Chaitanya. The beautiful divine sound coming down through Sri Chaitanya. Mat, one means mat. Okay. So, it's a famous Atma Rama verse. And at this point, of course, we've gone past it. But I'll read that just once again. And if you have any points or questions on that, we can talk about it. It says, whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he doesn't avoid anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires. So one point is that if Krishna is going to fulfill a desire which you have, which is separate from devotional service, at the same time, through fulfilling that desire, the desire becomes then fulfilled and finished, null and void, because one is not going to petition Krishna again and again to fulfill further other desires. So somehow when Krishna fulfills them, that's the effect, number one. Number two, that just by engaging in Krishna's service, then one gets shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, and then one forgets all other desires, naturally, of course. It's like when you go home, you feel satisfied, isn't it? Like Srila Guru Maharaj was saying, if you're wandering in a foreign country, you can go into some hotel, some kind of comfort you can get, you know, because the environment is very, very tough, very difficult. So you book into some hotel, pay some money, you get some room, you know, with some, if it's a cold country, the heater, if it's a warm country, a fan, all these contingencies must be there to give some modicum of comfort. So you can at least continue, can exist here. But it's all really artificial. It's all just things which are artificially, have to be created. Whereas if you go to your own house, your own country, or your own house especially, you get what he says, home comfort. Everything is automatically there without anything. If nice and if it's too warm, the breeze, you know, the temperature's just right, the food's just right, everything, without even asking. So that's like that, the difference between home and between not being at home. And this is it, isn't it? This is where we are. We're trying to go home, and from, as the Upanishad say, from darkness bring me to light. You know, from ignorance bring me to knowledge. From sorrow bring me to joy. Yeah. It's the movement of human life. Natural seeking, so, you know, sweetness, beauty, love, charm, like this, the words of Guru. But so Vrindavan is like that, Navadvip also. So we'll always be feeling some, you know, discomfort and some disharmony and some wants and some lack. You know, that's good. That's very good. We should worry about it. It will help us to go forward, to move forward towards the positive, towards the light, towards the loving embrace of the Lord. Yeah. Any questions?
Sometimes Maharaj, we're desiring material things, but really, you know, what's good for us and what we really want in our hearts is, of course, Krishna's lotus feet. These material desires are coming anyway.
Of course, yes. Like you see, because of our association with the material world, a long time, eons of time through so many births, we've accumulated a lot of baggage, you know? Association with the modes of material nature, and the baggage is there. And it's like stored, you know? And you store it in the trunk, under the seat, in the train. Mm-hmm. You sort of like forget about it. It's there, you know? And these things, they have to have their satisfaction. They've come to get their satisfaction from us. Because, you know, the debt has already been incurred. They won't let us off so easily. Oh, because you're doing Hare Krishna? Oh, okay, never mind, we go away. No, not like that. They're there, and they, especially the purging effect, the purifying effect of devotional service, they will come up. They will come up and they'll have to come out, be taken out systematically, and that causes a lot of pain when they come up through the consciousness, you know, buried and suppressed feelings, emotions from childhood. Who knows how far they go back, so many previous lifetimes. But at the same time, the help is there to deal with it and to process it. Yeah, so it's not that the problems and difficulties will be gone away or will be taken away, but we're given the strength to how to cope with them, to deal with them. And this is the thing, they say God doesn't give you more than you can manage or tolerate. Although it may feel like that sometimes. But then of course we have to throw ourselves down before the Lord and pray and beg. So wherever we are in this life, and by the end of this life, when the Lord chooses that our life will be finished in this body, then that's where we're at. No more, no less. And we'll go on from there, we'll continue from there in the future.
So could the fulfilling of someone's desire be considered realization of that desire, even if it's not actually engaged in?
You see, there's two ways. Generally, it's said that if you pour ghee on the fire will become more strong. You know, so by trying to fulfill the desires, they can't be finished. They won't be finished. Their strength will increase. There is some case though when, you know, that if you dump a whole load of massive, you know, half a ton of ghee on the fire, it could put the fire out. Yes, but that also is not a permanent solution. But it's one kind of path or practice, which some engage, kind of a tantric practice, right? To basically satiate your desire, and then the idea to be rid of it.
But I mean, like on a conscious level, rather than it actually being engaged in.
Yeah, on a conscious level, to lose the desire, to not have the desire anymore. Of course,
through realization of that, you know, because it's like your desires are often they're so subtle and concealed, and they sort of they sneak up on you, and you don't. Sometimes you can see a similar pattern forming in the things that you're desiring, but they've also always got a slightly different angle. You know, so each different angle is actually a different desire.
Exactly.
But then, if you can start realizing,
it's the same thing coming with another face. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so, because Krishna's saying he's fulfilling your desire, but that what he's giving you will not make you want to desire it again. So they must all be separate.
Yeah.
And then so, but. We also don't want to.
But it's not just that, it's because Krishna's fulfilling the desire in this case. So it specifically says Krishna fulfills one's desire. It's not like through the agency of material nature, as in the normal case. Talking about a devotee engaging in devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
Not the general case of, you know, people who.
Chanting on Krishna.
You know. That's the special mercy of Krishna then. One's desire will be fulfilled, one won't desire that again, or that you will forget it. You will just. It'll just be because it's one. It's like saying, you know, one will be the fulfillment of everything in Krishna's lotus feet. Generally, we're sort of like swimming or drowning in the ocean of questions, but there will be drowning in the ocean of answers. You know? Everything, like water, not. All around, not a drop to drink. Now the fish is in the water in the tank. Where is water? Yeah. The answer's there, shown everywhere in the environment. When we're at home, as we were saying, home comfort, and in the out of home, the foreign land somewhere, something following some clue, you know, like the golden thread to the centre of the labyrinth, and questions. So this knowledge, you know, like here, to be studied as part of Sambandha, you know, to know what is what, as we would say. Essentially, Krishna and his energies, the Lord, the Maya Shakti and the Jiva, from the Tathasta Shakti, this cosmic triangle, I call it, how they're related one to the other, Maya to Krishna, and Krishna to the Jiva to Maya, this way. What is that? Sambandha means, one meaning of bandha is to bind together, to join together. So they are linked and joined together intrinsically, the organic whole. It's an organic whole. So we're saying inferior energy, material energy, and superior energy. Energy is energy. It's manifested different ways. It's like the electricity, you can run a fridge, you can run an oven. One is very hot, one is very cold. The same energy, electrical energy. It's from the sun, of course. So Krishna's energy is manifested differently, and according to that, and you know, the jiva soul is between actually the tathashta, borderline between the Maya Shakti and the Swarup Shakti, and so we're in a vulnerable position. We have free will and free choice, but it's very limited, but weak and vulnerable. In other words, can be easily influenced, easily, you know, taken over by. So it is there, but it's vulnerable, and so that's why, of course, we need help, guidance, you know, from the higher energy. We are dependent on the higher energy to help us and take us up. Yeah. Because even the great sages who have said they attain liberation, vimukta maninas, but vimukta means they think they're liberated. Vimukta means totally liberated. It means like completely as liberated as you can be. But maninas, it's their mental idea. They're not really liberated, because you can only be liberated by Krishna, the personal relationship with Krishna. That's what liberation means. So if you go so high, it's like you go very high in the sky, out of this body, way, but you're there. Unless you get hold of the lotus feet of Krishna, you get your connection anchor there, that will take you up. Otherwise, surely you must come down. Doesn't matter how far you go, you will have to come down, unless you have the shelter here at the lotus feet of Krishna. That's why the bhakti lata, when it grows up, from the seed and the sprout comes, and then the vine, you know. And the vine is weak in the beginning, has to be really nourished and really helped and protected, fenced around, and the weeds taken out, and so on. And then, as it grows, of course, do you remember the story of Jack and the Beanstalk? He threw the beans out the window. Next morning, there's this massive great beanstalk, yeah. So it will grow, become stronger. Stronger and growing, it will go up and cross all the levels, all the planes of the universe. Bhuvama, Janatapa, Satyalok. Then, just like you see that even small plant, it comes through the concrete and the tarmac, you know. It seems so weak, you know. It will come through the thick concrete somehow. So it will break through the coverings of the universe and then continue on through the Paravyom, through the different levels. Finally, finding itself around the lotus feet of Krishna, and when touching on the lotus feet of Krishna, the fruit will come on the vine. That's prema bhakti, and that fruit, the soul, even in the material world, the seed is in the heart. Yeah? They will taste the fruit there, of course. But there are some, as long as the soul is in the embodied state, there will be some limitation also. You know, even for a pure devotee. Some limitation because of the body. So there are different stages of liberation also, Vaishnava liberation, I mean to say. Sarup Siddhi, Vastu Siddhi. The soul is first continuing his service in the material universe where Krishna is doing his pastimes. After that, going to Golok. These are stages. Even in the liberated stage, there are stages. So, gradation is everywhere. And even in the Vastu city also, the progress continues. The relationship with the Lord then is existing, is fixed. Fixed in its rasa, I mean. But then, closer and closer relationship with the environment will be there. The service environment. How to serve Krishna, that is infinite. There's no end of that. Of course, otherwise it wouldn't really be worth anything of attaining. It's just a limited thing, like here. And it's possible, it must be possible, because if the desire has been placed in our soul by Krishna to go to him, to attain him, and that's not possible of attainment, that's the ultimate cruelty. You know, people say, oh, God is very cruel, one person born in a starving condition or an epidemic, and after a few days they die. Other person born with a silver spoon in their mouth. You know, it's very unfair of God to do like that. You know, like the inequality, apparent inequality in nature we see. You say it's not fair, or God is, you know. A lot of these things are just excuses, because people, if they're looking for an excuse, you know, not to engage in you know, anything to do with God, then surely there'll be any number they can find. You know, and also they will blame they see the faults in the religion, in the institution or the religious setup, whether it be the Catholic Church, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, you name it. There's going to be some faults in the institutional side, which is a human man-made, so-called man-created thing. And then they will say, oh, therefore the religion is no good, because the, you know, the priests or whoever they are corrupt, you know, something. So religion no good, we won't follow. Well, that's very shallow, you know. But why don't you look and see what is there inside it, you know? So somehow, you know, the scriptures say that we, who has come to Krishna consciousness, they have done all the yajnas, all the pujas, the sacrifices, the tapasyas and different things in previous lives, and now they're fortunate to get the guru, you know, a real guru, and they become substantiated in their path of progress forward. And we may think that's, you know, very difficult to believe of ourselves in our own case. But it is true on some level. See, we have to take these things, the scriptures, sometimes to say to read between the lines would be the wrong expression, but to try to take the spirit of the scripture, the meaning, what is the real meaning inside that, you see. And that's called prayerful reading of scripture, what we call lectio divina. It means not just like reading a book. When you read a normal book, say like a novel, you're like, it's a page turner, right? It's a page turner. You're racing ahead to get to the conclusion. It's like building up. You know, they say on the back, it says, you know, this book is a real page turner. So, but, and it's not that, and it's not for curiosity either, but it's a prayerful reading, it's a meditation in itself. Every verse, you can just take one verse or one part of a verse, and that can be your meditation. So it's not like, oh, you know, you read so many chapters of the Gita, therefore your knowledge would be more, or you'd be more better off. You may be or may not be, but you could take quality is always above the quantity in that way. But some quantity should be there. But with that understanding, I'm engaging here prayerfully and with the sacred things, with the holy things. You know, divinity is everywhere, and they want to speak of them in the holy books. You know, so how you approach things, how we come to engage in devotional service is also very important as well. You know, and sometimes. There's a special, here in the Dham, of course, like Navadvipa, there's a special dispensation in a sense, you know, because one can just sort of engage in the service and carry on, and you know, to avoid offences, of course, but just carry on, it seems like a bit more smooth or automatic. There's some special energy here which allows for that, special grace of Krishna, Mahaprabhu, Guru, etc. Then, but outside, That is also very important, and more important if we're going to be outside. You know how Guru Maharaj said, you know, giving the Bhagavatam class, you know, outside the Dham, and the people who are just haggling over the, like this, you know, maybe, you know, is more than reading the Bhagavatam in London or New York or something. That understanding, you know, the plane, it's to do with the plane of existence. What seems to be lower in a higher plane of existence is higher than what seems to be the higher or more direct spiritual things in the lower plane of existence. You know, the sort of supreme example of that is when Krishna is telling, you know, about Uddhava. He's, you know, more dear to me than... And he went through it, you know, and even Lakshmi, and even Baladev, and even me, myself. And then Uddhava says, my aspiration is that I could have my birth as a piece of grass, small plant in Vrindavan. And that way I may be have the mercy of the foot dust of the gopis on my head. So Uddhava is the highest devotee in Dwarka, and his aspiration is like that. So then Guru Maharaj is saying, so that flame is walking on our head. You can't just go in and be there and walk there normally, of course. So you're walking on your head, you see, because everyone is above, all our gurus, the whole environment is... But when I say guru and master, doesn't mean the, with the whip, you know, with the exploitive. There's no exploitation there, it doesn't exist. It's already beyond the plane of exploitation, that's already finished in Viraja. It's dissolved, come to zero, come to nothing. And then only the plane of dedication begins. So how can we possibly think that there's exploitation of any kind there in that land? So all our guardians are very kind and very helpful and want to take us forward and, you know, and push us forward to Krishna, keeping themselves in the back. All are like that. So just imagine, everyone is like that and is doing like that, you know. But somehow the thing goes on. Otherwise you think, well, it wouldn't carry on. It's like if the train stops and the doors open, and everyone says, no, you go. No one would get on, isn't it?
not in India.
No.
Imagine, but in the theoretical case of that, but the thing goes on, that's happening. That's the nature of the mood and the energy there. But the thing is going on, you know, wonderfully. And also where there's competition, in so-called competition in the service, as well, you know, with Krishna at the center, but there's no ego, you know, the ego, the material ego is not there. So that's like when you rub two things of different quality together, normally materially you get friction, it's bad, you know. But here, rubbing together, it's like the chandan, the sandalwood paste, you know, produces sweetness, sweet smell, sweet sound, sweet vision, ear beauty, eye beauty, tongue beauty and everything. Actually, the currency of transaction there is anandam. You see, just like every species, they have some way of living together and recognizing each other. Like a fish in the water, the sparsha means touch. By the vibration of the water, the wave, fish can tell, oh, friend or foe. Is a predator coming to eat me, or friend is okay, relax. See, by the sparsha, the touch. So maybe the dog, you know, by the smell, who's been here, been there, marking their territory and all that. So like this. But there, ananda, the feeling, you know, the feeling between the being, all the beings there, how they're relating, in different rasas, moving in their own way, and yet all harmonized together. Again, an organic whole. But that's the infinite organic whole. Here's the finite organic whole. That all is organic whole. Actually, this is also infinite here, but we could call it the limited infinite. I mean, if such a thing is possible, that is the unlimited infinite. Yeah, so there you also have gradation, relativity, in the spiritual, but different than here. The different here, relativity means. There's two ways actually. One is substantially, one thing is substantially higher or better than another, looking at it that way. At the same time, everything is of the same nature, being of the material nature. And in the spiritual, the relativity is there, but in perfection. Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, perfect, more perfect, most perfect. Everything is already perfect, but gradation is also there for that. So here we are, you know, talking all these big things and, you know, struggling with the various psychophysical dimensions of life. But still, it's the ideal and aspiration, which is also very important. Some conception of, or idea of the goal will be there, which will have to be there. And then that's why it's important, the sambandha, the knowledge, you know? So to have some grounding in that, to understand, well, what is this ideal, this goal that you're called to strive for? Why is it like that? Why is it so great? Why is it so beautiful? And by comparison, relatively, what is my position, where I am and where I should be or want to be. So Sambandha is there, the foundational knowledge of what is what, the organic whole, and then the other end, prema, the prayojan, is the goal. And in between, there is the movement from here to there. Abhideya means from one part to the other part, A to B, or A to Z, the steps, the sadhana, the practice. So if we're going to engage in practice, Sambandha, why are we doing it? Why? What for what? Who, where am I? What am I? And where should I go? Without that, then we do practice for some time, and we see sometimes people, they go away, they leave, you know? Because they don't have any foundation in that. And then when the time comes, that the dryness comes, the lack of taste, this will happen. The honeymoon period, everything lovely, coming, joining in the mission, get a little bit taste of Krishna consciousness. But like, it's like in any relationship. We don't really have a relationship with God or Krishna, of course, in the beginning. You know, it's just a relationship with a concept of God or Krishna. And we have to be careful there, because we don't want it to become idolatry. Idolatry means worshipping false gods. So a false god can also mean our vitiated concept of God. We're actually worshipping that. So, you know, after some time, that will dry up and it won't be giving anything. And we think, oh. But that's the time, that's the very time when we can really start to have the opportunity, the chance to make some progress. It's like when the honeymoon period is over, then the couple say, hey, this is, are we going to be serious about this? Or just, see, that's why people in the material world, they jump from one relationship to the next, so they want to live in the honeymoon all the time. They want to have that high, you know, that euphoric feeling of freshness, of newness, of everything great, enjoyment, you see. But of course that, then you have to make the commitment into the relationship. And it's like then the couple, you know, say they get married and then they're living together in the house, he's reading the paper, smoking the pipe, you know, doing the knitting. It's not very exciting. But somehow they're living together. In fact, they're peacefully happy to be in each other's company. There's no great rah rah rah, you know, let's go out to the cinema and do other things in order to get some, you know, they're just peaceful in each other's company. So the different stages are there in the dark nights. And we talk about the dark night of the soul, but it's not really a time or a thing, and that's it, you get over that and that's it, you're scot free. It's a thing which is going on all the time, as long as we're, you know, under illusion. To what extent we're under illusion. So, that, you know, that's to be expected. Some confusion, some ignorance, or some inability to understand what we should do. And, did you ask a question, didn't you?
Ah, yeah, but he asked a lot.
Oh, yeah, another one. About desires, yeah. Yeah, we know desire isn't to be killed or blocked or suppressed, but to be engaged, to be directed. Desire is the soul, nature, soul, nature. You can't separate soul from desire. Desire and unit, because, you know, soul is a living being. Yeah.
Some arrangement with some Guru Dev, Krishna consciousness, and then being in the company, seeing everybody being engaged, and we're also engaging ourselves. How do we really know what we're doing is actually satisfying the desire and will of Krishna and Guru Dev? How do we really? Is that somebody tell you, or is that feeling?
It's a very good question. I'm sure you know Purudev. They ask Guru Maharaj, they say, what's the greatest fear for a devotee? And you know, there's different ways that could be answered. There's so many things you could say, but he answered in this way, that the greatest fear of a devotee is my service being accepted. You know, at the other end, you know. Then, if not, then it seems like everything I'm doing is in vain. You know? Well, how do you know?
Guru, sadhu, right. And tushti, you know, inner yeah. satisfaction.
Two sides, externally and internally. Saying guru, sadhu, shastra, and and the inner confirmation. Chitete, kore, aika, your internal, yeah.
Tasting.
That's it. But it's not the final thing, it's a work in progress. Okay. You know, what is satisfying then, today, may not be tomorrow. It's not like, oh, that's it, I've got it, I've got the pattern now, I've got the, I've sussed it out, the formula, you know, because there's no formula, because God is dynamic and always living and moving. Just like our desires may change from day to day. We want to speak of God, you know, Krishna. He's free, you know, and today he wants, you know, the milk, and tomorrow he wants the water. You might think the milk's better, but he wants the water, mm-hmm. so that's what will satisfy him at that moment. So we have to be flexible as well.
It seems that anxiety plays a significant role in
devotional service.
Yeah. Well, ensuring a dynamic relationship.
Dynamic could also mean just borrowing. Put a thought in it. If you put a thought in it, it's like you determining something. So how to find it?
There's also the case where, like you say, a person is sincere and they don't know what to do, or if what they're doing is the thing that should be satisfying in the other. But sincerely they're doing it to their best knowledge or understanding. And you know, Guru Maharaj said, and then you can ask, inquire, or you can take the help from the other brothers and sisters, you know, about this, about service. Also, one can think if one's guru is not present, like he's physically separated, or has left the world, and so on. One can also think, well, in that time, you know, how was he? What was his mood and what did he ask for? What did he like? What was his... and try to do according to that, of course. You know? So different ways. But as for final absolute guarantee, cannot give it. The only way you'll know that is when you're there. Oh, you're there. Finally. Otherwise it's a work in progress. But...
The guru may even say, yes, I'm pleased, just to encourage you, but he's not really pleased. You know, so you have to know that inner.
yeah. And that, there's also a trick on that one, because sometimes devotees, the guru will say, I want something. And they say, yes, I know what is his real heart and what he really wants. And they'll go around telling that, you know, and it may not be true. That's just their idea, you know.
That's what the thin line is.
That actually happened, yes.
Right. There was a quote on the board that said, the chanting must be done with a service attitude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's very important. We call it the attitude or the motivation behind it for service. It's service. As a service. It's not an exercise to elevate oneself. Even if one thinks that it's an exercise or a way to purify oneself, which is of course purifying, that doesn't qualify as bhakti either. Unless it is for the pleasure of the other, for the satisfaction of the other, then it can be said to be bhakti. So, you know, that example, Sridhar Swami, a great commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, quoted a lot by Srila Swami Maharaj and Srila Guru Maharaj, and great Vaishnav from the from the Vishnu Swami, yeah? Sampradaya, this who's the Acharya of that one? Ramanuja Madhva
Nimbarka,
yeah, from Nimbarka Sampradaya, Sridhar Swami in the 13th century. So, you know, and he said that even if one is reading, you know, like sounding the scriptures, reading or chanting, you know, with the idea that by this I'll be purified. And so then I'll be able to be qualified, more qualified to engage in devotional service. It's not at least it's not unalloyed devotion, pure bhakti. Some other motivations mixed, jnana mishra. But it must be for the pleasure of, guru, for anger, the deity. And it's a test, like I experienced in London. Sometimes I'd go to the temple in the evening and they'd say, kind of the friend of mine said, "Didi, you're coming this evening?" "Yeah, come here and give the class." And they said, "Oh, will anyone be there?" "Yeah, it'll be so and so, a few people." So anyway, you get there, and they're all out doing service or doing something else. Or maybe they just don't like me, I don't know. But there's nobody there, right? And then you're there, and you've got this 40-minute slot, and you've got to read, and you have to, for the pleasure of the deities, But, your thing is, your heart's going, "Oh, someone's here." And it's not really, because you want them to reciprocate, talk with them and discuss, But it's not so pure, feeling like, it's the pleasure of the deities and like that. So it's not easy. It's a difficult thing, a high thing, I mean, we talk about sacrifice, what does that really mean? To sacrifice if you're just sacrificing things that you don't really want. I've got this old exercise book, don't know what's wrong, please. Is it something really valuable, your best Schaefer pen, you got for Christmas, rubies in the hilt, please take. You just give without counting the cost, without attachment, just give it. So to give totally like that, and what's the most valuable thing of ours in our possession is ourselves, Atma Nivedana. To give ourselves wholesale, that's but that's the ideal, but by degrees, slowly. We can't. No one's going to come and kill you because you didn't do it on the first day. So and it's something very different than in the material world. The whole movement, the whole energy is going the opposite direction. Self, self, self. Me, mine. What I want and I desire. All exploitation. Everyone doing that, in their own realms, little spheres. But, also some good nature and charitable nature, wanting to help others and wanting to give others. But it's vitiated because of the material energy. So, service of humanity and service. But there also we must be careful because we mustn't become cynical, and it says in I think St. John's Gospel, if you cannot serve your neighbours who you can see, how can you serve God who you can't see? So it's all our manifestations, of course, of the Lord, but we're saying to the centre, to the absolute centre of the source, to Krishna. But in our dealings in the environment and with people, you see, I think a devotee will be very, by nature, will be very kind. One saint said, "I can't understand saints who don't love their family." Who reject things, because devotee doesn't reject anything as material. It loves all and respects all. But his energy is going to go to the centre, the service of Krishna. And actually, through the centre, all are satisfied. This is the way. I mean, a real devotee will be. They won't be seen. People won't see them as, this person is an elitist, keeping themselves separate from society, or is in some way, they think, "Oh, what a very, very kind person." Of course, that's a real devotee. There's no, on one level, there's no separation in their mind, in their heart, between anything and God and Krishna. On one level, at the same time, they're exclusively directed towards Krishna. I can't explain it, it's inconceivable. Mm-hmm. But because in Sambandha everything is part and parcel of Krishna, so nothing, how can anything be rejected or hated, you see? It's a tricky question, and sometimes people come and they say, but you, Hare Krishna people, why don't you help people in open hospitals and give some medical dispensary? Like as Maharaj said, that's like a whitewash in a way, you know, just to satisfy them. They want to see that, so they won't make opposition, they'll give support, you know. But it's difficult for people with an ordinary vision, dualistic vision, to appreciate the exclusivity of Vaishnavism. There's no question. They will see that the service should be going to humanity to be of value, more value. Of course. Yeah. But you know, that's where we are. That's the path we're on, and we have to harmonize.
Sitting to that, if you see our Vaishnava views, they're taking a worm from the heart and small guy and taking and putting it there. That's the highest kind of relationship there is. But looking from, since we are dealing with common people as well as we want to go to Guru and Krishna, then we are doing it So the adjustment, that's the difficult part.
The difficult part, yeah. It's in the vision, isn't it? Our vision is, in that way, discriminating between Maya and Krishna. What is Krishna and what is not Krishna? And what is anti-Krishna? And you know, the four things of the Madhyam Vaishnava, middle stage Vaishnava, he sees Krishna, he sees the devotees, and the innocent and the ignorant. And he behaves accordingly with each. Some difference and adjustment in the behavior accordingly. But the higher Vaishnava, right? The ten Vaishnava. So
ignorant is the envious also?
And envious, yeah. So he will avoid them, right?
Yeah.
Unless he's. Yeah, okay. The higher Vaishnava sees everything in Krishna, Krishna in everything. So everything is fine, everything is alright already. Nothing to do, no preaching to be done. Only I'm out of Krishna consciousness. So then, you know, saying that the Krishna, when we say the pure devotee comes down to the middle level, not he actually comes down, it's by the action of Krishna, the movement of Krishna within, to allowing him to see with that vision, discriminating vision, as to be preaching, you know. But the oneness is there, the wholeness is there, behind, you know, of course.